You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions, where you can get your step-by-step, easy-to-follow, simple plug-and-play plan to take you from where you are to where you want to be in 90 days. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Tonight we're talking about, well, we talk about all sorts of things, but tonight we're going to talk specifically about love. We asked a number of people, how do you know you're in love? How do you know what love is? Somebody, tell us what love is. The question that was asked was, how do you feel? What do you believe? How do you think? What makes you go, I know I'm in love?
That is a big question.
So what you and I talked about this earlier today, like what, or I guess it was last night. What makes you feel like you're in love? Is it you can't stand being away from the person?
I guess the one of the thinking in myself is when you are in love, in your mind, you're thinking always with this person. And everything that you see something, you figure out, I want to do this with him. I want to do this with the person that you are in love. And when you are separate, you're missing the person.
Yes.
Okay? And then when you talk to do some project, you try to say, maybe he is with me in this project because now I'm thinking for both versus myself.
Okay. So I'm going to go into some of the strange theory that I was saying earlier, which is if you and your partner find a piece of land and you say, I want to build a house. And you decide, well, what do we want the house to look like? You say, I want it made of stone. I want to make it of wood. And then you kind of agree to what needs to be done. And then together you start building that house. You dig into the soil. You dig and you make a big hole where you're going to put the basement. And you pour the cement. And you go through all the stages of building that house together. That house is equally a part of each of you, you and your partner. Mm-hmm. So you have something together, and there's a lot of responsibility for that house. There's a lot of
commitment
to, in order to get it completed. A pride, maybe, that you're happy that you did that. There's a we talked about hard work. There's a part of you in that house. Now, of course, the house being a metaphor or an analogy to what happens to ourselves in a relationship. Because of the brain's neuroplasticity, the ability for the brain to grow and create new brain, you know, additional thought paths, new neuron connections, new thought patterns. When you and your partner build a relationship together, have conversations like, we want to build a house together. Mm-hmm. We want to go on vacation together. Hey, how were you? When you were a kid, what did you like doing? The more connections you build in the new connections in your brain that incorporate your partner, you end up having part of you is actually them. What they've told you, their thoughts, their background, their wants and desires, their likes, their dislikes, they all are starting to weave themselves into new brain matter in your own head.
That just makes sense.
So part of long-term love, and we'll talk about the long-term first, is that you actually become part of each other. you almost automatically can start thinking, what are they going to think? What is Lizette going to say? You don't want to make assumptions, but you start to get an inclination. There's a connection. There's a connection because of those similarities that you're building, that commonality. Because if you're each building new thoughts together, those new thoughts reside in each of your brains simultaneously. They build on top of who you were, and now what you are becoming together with your partner is something much bigger than either of you were alone. So how do you know you're in love? I think the deeper that person has gotten inside your brain, it's actually a physical, at that point, a physical connection that has also chemical content to it.
And also I believe it's different for everybody. So some people have different chemical symptoms about love. It depends on the person.
Studies have shown that what you think is love in one relationship can be a whole set of different criteria for a different relationship. One may be, my heart was always fluttering and I couldn't wait to be with them. My palms would sweat. I would be anxious. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't wait to see them. And, mm-hmm. and that relationship was love. In another relationship, it could miss some of those chemical responses that made you uncontrolled, and you may say, you know what? I just want to be with them. I want to protect them. That it's a feeling of commitment. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we want to do tonight is go through the different chemical stages of typical love as researched by research scientists and psychologists to come up with maybe some new theories, maybe discuss some old theories, and then continuously roll out new ideas that might be helpful to us, to you, to the world, and beyond. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So let's go with, first of all, the show is titled Love. How do you know? How do you know? And we're going to talk about how we might know. But let's talk about how we get into a relationship at first. So many people agree, and when we talk about psychology, there's people always break things down into one thing, two things, three things, five things, and you can research on Google and Wikipedia and different. You ask anybody, you go, how many stages are there of love? And someone will say, there's three. No, there's four. No, there's seven. No, there's eight. To break things down as simply as possible, there are three major pieces of love, stages of love in humans. And pretty well agreed through many different people, psychologists, the three are lust, attraction, attachment. And this is very similar in a way with you know, all cultures, all people around the world. So, what do we say lust is? Lust. Do you remember this? Lust. You don't know. I just wanna be with that person and have sex.
Okay,
that's lust. It's okay. You lust after somebody. It's you're not really thinking of anything other than that physical connection. That chemistry, a lot of people think of it as chemistry.
But it's not the same, the attraction laws? What is the difference?
No, there's the attraction is, and we'll get into the chemistry involved in each, but it is a distinct, separate thing. So lust is, you don't even have to like the person. You just find yourself sexually attracted to them. And it really is part of that innate, I want to reproduce and create more
animal instinct.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a typically short-lived portion of a relationship. Okay. And it doesn't actually make any... It doesn't give any... And there's a nice study that we'll talk about later. It it doesn't have any bearing on how long the relationship will be.
So this is kind of go like the, oh, I fall in love in the first moment that I see this person.
Yes, and then 3 weeks later, I don't know what happened. It's just not the same. I don't remember. Well, and we talked about that before. We'll talk about it again tonight.
Yeah, I read some article talk about how strong the theory when the people say, see this person the first time I fall in love.
Right.
So this is maybe the same.
Well, and let's say there could be some nuances there. There is that you meet somebody for the first time and you just hit it off immediately, but it's really a physical attraction, a chemical attraction, and that's the lust piece. Now, you could also meet somebody and you go, wow, they're so smart. They're so intelligent. They're doing the things I'd like to do, or I do, and I'd like to do those things with them. And you could have, like, at the beginning, I was like, they're an awesome person. Much different than thinking to yourself, I meet somebody, I want to have sex with them.
Okay.
So, and we'll talk about the different chemistries. And in fact, let's go into the first one, which is that let's think about lust, attraction, and attachment as being universal drives of the human species. Drives like hunger.
Okay, why not share that?
Sure, we can share that. So this is actually a question. This was a question put forward in a paper that was discussing
Helen Fisher.
Helen Fisher's work on love. And the paper that was looking at her theory said, if lust, attraction, and attachment are associated with elevated levels of central dopamine, and drives are associated with elevated levels of dopamine as well, then it suggests that the stages of love are a drive. That's their summary of what Dr. Helen Fisher, was stating, that lust, attraction, and attachment are drives, internal drives of the human being. I would suggest that if we take the, and I guess we're going to do that anyway in a moment or two here, that there is, I think, a component to that. But the critical way of looking at this was, it was almost cyclical thinking, which maybe not cyclical, but a generalization, that if these stages of love were associated with dopamine, and dopamine is associated with our drives. You know, dopamine is released for pleasure fulfillment. Like, I eat a chocolate cookie and it just tastes so good, I get a rush of dopamine. I go and run and I get a runner's high, and there's a release of dopamine. So it is one of those things that is automatically released from our brain when we have that feeling of pleasure, like that was really good. That's typically a dopamine ejection from our brain, a secretion of the dopamine. So there was some reasoning here that she said, if lust releases dopamine, if attraction releases dopamine, if attachment releases dopamine, if it's involved in all those stages, and it's also involved in these things that we call drives, like the survival drive, the hunger drive.
And also, right. She say that all this is in the, almost in close to the area in the brain. So physical, all these component is almost in the same area.
So the theory is, and there's some good argument for that. And that's the nice thing about theories. They're just theories. They're theories that are trying to make sense of what we see around us. So I want to go to the second part of this, is her actual reasons for these things being drives is that, unlike emotions, which just tend to come and go, lust, attachment, attraction are things that don't come and go. They are long term. They may be long term as 2 years, but emotions come and go. You know, you can have multiple emotions in a minute, but typically, when you have lust, it's a ongoing lust, like it's more than a minute. And when you get to attraction and attachment, they're not just up and down. So
one of the part when she talked about lust is And she, I like one interview that I saw about her, and she said, if you feel that you are in the bar drinking and you see the guy, you know, and the guy is married and the guy has kids, you're not thinking about that because your brain is in this, you're not thinking in the future, you're not thinking the all stuff is this moment.
So arousal, lust. So think of lust as arousal. I'm just aroused. I'm like sexually aroused, or I'm just attracted physically to somebody at the bar. Mm-hmm. That arousal is shown to release chemicals in the brain that shut off the frontal cortex.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think what you're getting to is you tend to make poor decisions when you're aroused because you stop thinking logically. Add into that alcohol. So a bar where you may be looking to have a couple of drinks and you see somebody, you may make a decision you would never make otherwise. So either you have a really good excuse for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they say that you know, figure out all this stuff.
And you don't.
Yeah.
Until later. It's like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
Again.
Again, several
times. Can we meet again this Friday?
I know you were married. I'm married.
Oh, my. So the different stages of love, she says, they're focused on specific rewards. Like the reward of the lust stage is having sex. The reward of the attachment stage is cuddling and holding and being close. The reward of the attachment stage is feeling good about your association with the person, liking them for who they are and wanting to be close. And there's some positive and negatives about all these things. So because these things are focused on specific rewards of having that stage, she states that these are reasons why they're drives. So we had the other one there, which is you just saw on the screen, which was unlike emotions, the lust, attraction, attachment are not associated with any facial expression. And I guess what that was trying to bring forth is that the facial expression being tied to emotion was not like, there's not like, you know, other than lust and you're in a bar and you're making eye contact, or you're at a party and you're seeing, yes, you'll have facial expressions, but it's not like, you're not like, or and like, if you had like one of those facial expressions, you'd probably be like, this person's, I don't want to be, are you okay? So, and then finally, and I think this is very important, that these stages of love, these three stages, why this could be considered a drive, or these could be drives, is that more so than emotions, they're difficult to control. If you've ever been through that lust stage and attraction stage, and you're now in a relationship, and you're just so attracted to the person, you may be able, like if you were happy or angry, you may be able to say, okay, I got to be stop being happy or angry, and I'm going to just do something else, and I'm going to change my emotion. And you can do that quickly. But if you've been attracted to somebody, if you built into that stage, and then suddenly they break up with you, it's devastating. I've never been devastated. Like I've watched a TV show, and it's funny, and I laugh. Mm-hmm. And then I burn my finger on the stove, and I go, ow, and I'm not like devastated that I'm no longer laughing. But if a relationship breaks, we're devastated. Could be. We can't control our emotions so much. You've heard people like they can get depressed, they can be upset, they can be angry. But when they're angry, that it's a long term thing. It's not a short term thing. I can't help myself.
Yeah.
So we started the show, and actually, let's take a quick break. And we come back, we're going to talk about the start of the show for a moment here. We'll be back in a moment on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
And periodically we have these brain, what do they call it? Little blank outs, because we sometimes, or at least at one point in our life, we did a show called Love Works, which you may have heard about. And we sometimes say, welcome back to Love Works with Lizette and Jim. And I'm going, whoa, what did I just say?
Oh, maybe different wife.
Oh, could have been. Different husband. It could have been. Maybe it was the fourth stage of of love. Just before break, we were talking about how these stages of love, how we feel during these stages of love, are difficult to control. And I said, we'll go back to the beginning of the show. At the beginning of the show, we spoke about when two people build a house together, or, quote, build their relationship together, and they're building their mind, and they're both creating new thoughts, they're creating dreams, or creating realities together, and their minds are growing with the thoughts of each other, the thoughts of each other of what they're doing today, and the thoughts of what might happen in the future. And that brain has grown. My proposal is that when a relationship breaks, that new structure that's tied to the rest of your brain basically is just ripped apart, because all those connections that you had with your partner are no longer true. What you believed that was going to happen in the future, what you thought, all that stuff is destroyed, and it's tied to the rest of your brain. Mm-hmm. And that's like, it's just, imagine if you took your computer and you had Excel on it, and you had Word, and you had all these different software packages that they all work together as part of the Microsoft package. They were based upon a common set of themes or beliefs or icons or graphics. And now suddenly you said, oh, this one thing is no longer true. And all the software that had to relate together doesn't know how. And it can cause a spiral of sometimes despair, unhappiness. There are things that it is difficult to deal with when people break up, and suddenly those things that we thought were concrete have turned to sand, to dust. So I want to go back there. Okay, let's go to that next slide. I'll do it here. Mm-hmm. Here we go. All right. Now, this is something Lizette and I had been speaking about last night. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
So you can look at, let's look at evolutionary thoughts on love. We talk about lust. Why would lust have been developed?
Because it's the way that you break the ice to connect with somebody.
It forces you over that edge of saying, mm-hmm, I want to have connection. I want to just focus on survival of the feel good. Darwin talks about in his evolutionary theory, or theory of evolution, on how the things that were fittest to survive, survived. So in a dry environment where seeds got really hard, a bird with a really sharp beak, if that's what happened, if the seeds were really hard, the ones with the sharp beak could break into the seed and eat, where the ones with the softer beaks couldn't. And so depending on weather, depending on environment, depending on what was needed for survival, the things that were fittest to survive, survived. So in evolution, mm-hmm, creatures that wanted to have sex,
yeah,
survived. And those that were like, nah, I'll just go over here in this cave and I'll study paintings.
I'm happy to be alone.
That those types of people tended not to pass their genes on. And I say types of people, types of apes, types of unicorns. Yeah, unicorns like being by themselves.
Maybe this is the reason there are no more unicorns. Dinosaurs.
Yeah, there's like, we...
Dinosaurs have short arms.
They can't hug each other. Oh, it's so bad. Come here. Don't go away. Don't walk away. Yeah.
Okay.
And they couldn't pay the bills at the restaurant either, right? Mm-hmm. I can't do it. So no one wanted to date them. And so the dinosaurs got no dates. They couldn't reproduce, and they're gone. So that's what we want to share with you, evolution. So going back to passing on of genes, is that the goal is we want to pass on our genes. And so now we go from the lust portion of we need to have, if it didn't make us feel good, if sex made us get hurt and we were in pain, we probably wouldn't want to do it as much. But since it makes us feel good, it releases chemicals, which we'll talk about in a little bit, it's like, oh, this is something that's of interest to us. it's of interest. It helps us pass on our genes. Okay, now we've passed on our genes. We want to protect our genes. What does that mean? When we talk about why would there be a benefit beyond lust of attraction and attachment? That you get together, like say I get together with a woman in the jungle somewhere, and it's very dangerous. Well, I'm with the woman, she becomes pregnant, it's my child, and I want the child to survive. I'm going to look after my family, I'm going to perhaps go hunt and fend for food, but I want to keep other people away from my wife. I'm sorry, my mate.
Your child.
And my child. Because now, you know, the child's very vulnerable. You need to raise the child. There needs to be protection of the child. So the people who tended, because human children need so long of a time before they can be on their own.
Yes.
What is it, like 1 year?
No. 35, something.
35, 36 years old?
In some cases.
That you need to be able to protect that child. Mm-hmm. The ones who protected their child, the children survived, and they were able to have children. The ones who said, I had that lust, but I don't have that attraction, and I don't have that attachment, they didn't protect their children. Long story short, is their genes probably stopped pretty quickly.
Anyway, we'll have more people in the planet.
Won't have more people. So the ones who would not protect go away, which would be true with all animals everywhere, right? So if there were animals that protect their children or their litter or whatever you want to call it, their babies, that those babies survive, so they got to figure out smart ways of doing it. The other thing is that many species, the offspring of the species can survive much quicker, much sooner than humans. You know, so under a year, and that animal is off on its own, and they can handle it.
Yeah, the species, the human is the more fragile.
We're so fragile. So it's actually surprising that we still exist, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
After COVID, so.
So the idea of ensuring survival is that all these things, if you look at lust, attraction, and attachment, and you looked at them as the stages that go through the life stages of a child, that lust, there's then the procreation, and there's potentially a baby about to be born. Then there's attraction, where you see the caring and the nurturing that each give each other, and there's some attraction there. And then the attachment is you feel a commitment, and attachment is that commitment, is that now you're committing. You may not have the lust anymore, you may not have the same attraction you had before, but now you have a commitment, and that's the attachment stage. But that falls kind of in line
with... Also for a woman, I think definitely I feel for myself that we have some kind of the feeling when you feel protection. Mm. So for me, is attractive, feel protect, and not necessarily is control. It's just feel protection.
So is that a social construct, or is that because of evolution?
Both.
So it's reinforced socially.
Yeah.
So and this is something that it might be a difficult subject, but we talk about social norms and that's what society puts on people, and therefore we can't have definitions of certain things and how people are. A lot of societal definitions are reflections of evolution. They may be, you know, if evolution wasn't the way it was, the societal norms might be different as well. So we have to go, which ones are actually positive and which ones are hurtful and negative? Yeah, that's another conversation.
Yeah, that's different.
But there are some social and societal norms that are based upon what's good for evolution. And then, you know, religion steps in and reinforces what's good for, well, religion, but what's good for keeping a public in control. Mm-hmm. And then politicians step in. And so it becomes this whole reinforcing of an ideology that some of it may have been loosely based on evolution and survival of the fittest. But if we start looking at that, how has evolution guided us to where we are? And how, you know, we think something's love, and it's just all these chemical processes that evolution has given to us to get through that lust stage to the attraction stage to the attachment stage.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Sure.
So, do we want to talk about chemicals? We could talk about chemicals. We're going to talk about chemicals during these different stages, and what does that do and what does that mean? So, during the lust stage, there's testosterone released in men, and it makes them more aroused, more wanting to be with that woman. It also, estrogen is released in women, and these two things help promote the arousal and attraction between people. Lust occurs across species, that different species have, not that goes from one species to another species, but each species has this arousal portion. And sometimes it's time of the year, it's, you know, the deer are in rut, it's time for them to mate, that there's different things that create the lust in the species. It can be, as we said, time of year, it can be time of month, it can be where the cycle of the universe is, many different things.
The moon.
But it pushes us on a basic drive to find a partner to spread our genes with. Again, evolution. Lust is different than love. And I thought this was very, very interesting, and I'll pop off the screen for a minute. But they did a study where they injected men with testosterone, and it made them desire a potential lover more. I want to be with a woman, I want to be with somebody more. But it was pushing the men, they were testing what happens if I put more testosterone in, and it pushed them to be with a potential partner, a lover. But it led to no long-term commitment, meaning it didn't lead to more long-term commitment. It was strictly for being with somebody in an arousal, lustful state. So we spoke about before that lust itself, or arousal, and this was another one that came, this was at a Harvard paper, that lust or arousal turns off regions in the brain, and we've talked about this as well, that regulate critical thinking, self-awareness, and rational behavior. Including
never take a decision when you are lost.
When you're chemically in love, and there are other things that happen too, which will be very interesting. That when you're in love, don't buy a car because you'll buy two. But that's shutting off the front of the prefrontal cortex. And the next stage we talk about it. So you get through that lustful stage where you're just wanting to be with somebody because, and this is typically the thought, oh, it's love at first sight, it's chemistry. Mm-hmm. Chemistry, biology, it's evolution. So during the next, since you're dating for a little while, you can't get enough of each other, now you get into the attraction stage. The attraction stage is you start having an obsession about your lover and you crave being together. Your heart races and it can't stop beating. You don't want to eat. You just want to be with the person. You have extra energy and excitement just thinking. Did we say you can't sleep? Yes, we did. We said that. This is brought on by three chemicals, which is norepinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin. And each of those chemicals have different things that they do. That the dopamine, we talked about actually earlier, it's what's released when we, one is when we have sex, dopamine's released. It's when we feel pleasure of anything, the workout, going shopping, you smell cookies.
How about my intellectual orgasm?
That would be, you would dopamine. Have dopamine, sure.
Oh.
All these things.
This is all the level of dopamine.
But all these things, athletics, sex, cookies, having a great conversation with somebody, that if you derive pleasure, you're getting a dopamine release. I think that's also the runner's high when you're running and you have a release where you're like, oh my gosh, you feel good. And when this stuff courses through our brain. Norepinephrine, it stimulates the production of adrenaline. Ooh, that's the thing. So your heart races and you can't sleep. Mm. Your palms may sweat. It can help increase joy and reduces appetite. And again, this is, remember, these things are happening now in the attraction state. So you've gone through the, I want to be with somebody because I just want to replicate. I just want to reproduce. Mm-hmm. I'm just somehow just sexually, chemically, biologically attracted. And now as I'm dating them, as I'm going out more with them, I start getting this new set of chemicals, which are more, I'm getting benefit, and it's more, these chemicals take over for the testosterone and for the estrogen. And then finally, the one serotonin, which is very interesting, is that this is, we were talking about Helen Fisher again, that this actually kind of goes a little bit with and against what she was talking about, but the serotonin tends to decrease for men in this state, but increases for women, which was kind of interesting. But also low levels of serotonin may cause obsessive thinking. So obsession might kick in the attraction stage, but more likely for men than women, or more so for men than women. And it could just be a slight difference. I'm wondering if this is why men tend to be maybe more jealous, maybe more emotional reactive. If something goes wrong in this, if they think, you know, somebody's cheating or something like that, that there's more of a, you know, I'm obsessed and I need to be with that person. That person can't talk to anyone else.
So you say that for a woman, because the obsessive of thinking is, I mean, maybe the woman's thinking more about this level of serotonin versus the man?
No, it's saying that the serotonin, as it's decreased, it's, so they said that studies showed, and I think it was a study in France, where people with OCD, mm-hmm. where they needed things exactly this way, you know, the obsessive compulsive disorder, they had lower levels of serotonin.
Okay.
So there was an association of men in the attraction stage of a relationship suffer from, have a likely lower mm-hmm. level of serotonin, and people who are OCD, who are obsessive and compulsive in their thinking and what they need, have a lower level of serotonin. They thought that maybe there is some correlation there, where they said women's may go up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, women are so stable.
Well, maybe we have more neurons.
More neurons to work with?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, maybe. That could be true. We're going to talk a little bit more about chemicals, a little bit more about attachment, a little bit more about lust, and
love.
Attachment and love when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Be right back. "90 Day Soulmate" is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Tonight we're talking about love. What is it? Is it a chemical? Is it real? Is it our minds?
It's real. It's fantasy.
Is it brainwashing?
Yeah, it's a program from the aliens.
You know when I met you and you had that watch going back and forth? What was that? What did you just put in my arm? 2 days later, I'm...
You don't have the
my liver's gone.
Yeah. So, for good money.
Yeah, Lisa gave us a down payment on a house, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. So, after lust... and arousal and attraction that way, and then the attraction stage of a relationship. And let's talk about the first stage being very short. Could be 30 days, 90 days, 6 months. It could be, you know, a very short period of time. So it's definitely not long lasting. You can still have arousal looking at your partner years later, but it's not the only piece of the relationship at that point. You move on to the attraction stage. Mm-hmm. Where you develop thoughts together and you, oh, the cuddling, you want cuddling and stuff like that. Yeah. Oh, is that attraction or is that attachment? Well, let's see what our handy dandy presentation says. So attachment is a more lasting commitment to your loved one.
Mm-hmm.
It makes us want to do what? Move into the cave together. Get married. Get matching tattoos. And or have children.
Yeah, and also the attachment sometimes say how much attachment for stay with your partner and make up that your children grow up. This is the attachment.
Okay, so period. The attachment is the period is to help your children grow up now.
Mm-hmm.
So that, which is interesting because the dopamine decreases, that is the reward, like that, oh, the cookies smell so good. Well, the cookies don't smell so good anymore.
Now I know it's sugar.
No more sugar.
Sugar, yeah.
A little honey, but no sugar. So that goes down. Oxytocin and vasopressin are now the two chemicals that start to become more prevalent in their release in the relationship for those who are making it through the attachment stage. These hormones help people want to stay together. The word that's used here is nurture, take care of their partner. Did I say cuddle?
Mm-hmm.
Be cuddle and close with their partner, have coffee and conversation, creating plans and discussing dreams together. Dreams? You mean stuff like?
Dreams.
While Victoria dreams? A book about dreams.
That was looks like a commercial.
It looks like a commercial. Unplanned. Yeah. Unplanned commercial. But there's, this is, when we talk about creating plans and discussing dreams together, this book that Lizette and I were able to put together and write is based upon creating something together, creating plans, discussing our dreams, or actually more Lizette's dreams, but writing a book. And that is something that really we did in our attachment stage, right? So this is like, this was really attachifying.
This is our child.
It's our child. We nurture it.
We're waiting to grow up.
Oh, hold on. Can I grab that one?
Okay, now it's bigger.
This is the child, and then it grew up, and now it's bigger. So we've got one in the smaller version and one in a larger version, which is a little bit easier to read for me.
Mm-hmm.
When I take notes in, when I'm taking a look at what we wrote, and if I'm trying to assign it to. Okay, let's go to that. Sure, go ahead. So we talked about the oxytocin and vasopressin. What is oxytocin? Oh, it's released during orgasm. So sex may bring couples closer together because this is more so dopamine has gone away a little bit, but now the oxytocin is being released. It is a bonding agent. It may, and you see the thing, it says may impact clingy behavior. You know, clingy, I'm being clingy. Stop being so clingy.
But I see the when I was in one seminar talking about oxytocin, the guy said, you can use after this moment, the sex, you can ask, oh, I want to have a new car. Maybe you have more positive.
Oh, darn it. I missed it.
Yes, in this moment, your level is high, and then you can say, oh, yes.
Okay, in January, we take a look at that again.
So I have to wait now.
My car's out of gas. No more gas in the tank.
Beep, beep.
So, but what's interesting about it is that the positive is it may bring couples closer together, but the negatives could be that closeness that's being brought together during the attachment is also creating jealousy. It's creating a clingy behavior. One of the articles I read also said that oxytocin also helps you have an affinity towards groups that are like yourself. So in a family, we're the same family, we grow closer together, but maybe in your religion, you grow closer to your religion. In your culture, you grow closer to your culture. It can create identifying with people, cultures, people who have the same thoughts as you. It can create a way to attach with them as well. Because being with people who you like or that are like you may release oxytocin, which actually bonds you closer together with people who are like you or people you like. And they said that was a negative. So the positive part of that is back in evolution, where you're living in a small little area with people you know, and you want to protect them, it builds and bonds a strength between them where you want to protect each other and fight off those who are, quote, not like you. That was probably the reason it was a benefit back then. And then vasopressin helps aid in non-neglect of partner. So it helps keeps couples close, but that's not the vol story.
Why?
The vol story. A vol.
Mm-hmm.
So what are voles? Voles are little, like, what are they, like those, not mouse, mice. They're like a big, like, they're like a mole, but they're not. They're voles. They say prairie dogs. They did a study with prairie dogs where they, what did they do? They reduced, they actually took away, and I'm going to try to remember how they did this. They reduced the vasopressin that they gave to a certain group of prairie dogs. And those prairie dogs tended not to hang out with their prairie dog wives anymore. So it was the male prairie dogs, and they were cutting off and blocking their vasopressin. Those prairie dogs, those voles, would just leave their female companion alone, let other males go have it with her. They no longer had this attachment. It reduced their attachment to their mate. And I guess prairie dogs are a type of animal that does tend to stay together in little groups. Well, the males would just no longer care if Mrs. Vole would go hang out with Bobby Vole down the street.
Yeah.
So the Vole story is an indication what vasopressin does. It, with the vasopressin release in the system, it makes you more attached to those around you, to your loved one.
Yeah.
So that was that. Finally, do you remember we asked our audience, what is love?
Mm-hmm.
What are three things you feel, believe, or need to have in order to know you are in love? So one of the answers we had gotten was, I can still feel my feet. And it's a little sarcasm there. It's like, you know, you're floating. You're floating. When you feel in love, you're floating. You don't even feel like you're touching the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you can still feel your feet. I feel my feet, but I'm not touching the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I'm still breathing. And all I need is for her to touch me. Let's go through each of those again. That love can inspire us to have these just amazing emotional feelings of pleasure, of happiness. And if, depending on the state, if it's the lust state, the attractive state, the attachment state, maybe we have other physical things, like, you know, we talked about not having to sleep. I don't want to sleep. I can't sleep. I'm all sweaty. I'm so energetic. You know, because
you just kind of stop thinking about.
And you stop thinking. And so logically, you're not thinking right. Like, I feel unbelievable. I don't even feel like my feet are on the ground. The one, I'm still breathing. Like, you have to check. Am I breathing? I'm with somebody and I'm talking to them and I got to go. I forgot to breathe. You know?
No, no. I don't remember when you play guitar, because we are in the movie, you play and send me in my phone. I'm missing this part.
I send you again.
Okay.
All I need is for her to touch me. When you long after someone so much that you just want them to touch you, that's love. That if it's in a, I want them to, you know, it's in a non-sexual way versus sexual way.
Yeah, both together.
Well, together, but if it's just, oh, I want them to touch me in this way, and it's just sexual, that could be the lust stage. It might not be, you know, is it love? Anyway, we talk about love theory, the stages of love, and we've defined love as lust, attachment, and, I'm sorry, lust, attraction, and attachment. Mm-hmm. Again, three stages. The psychologists come up with, these are the three things. These are evolutionary programs that we have, and we've marketed them as love.
Yeah.
But we've defined them as love, and as soon as we define them as love, that's what love is. Right? So love is what we define it to be.
Yeah. I told you it's not the same for everybody, but some kind of general.
Yes.
Generality.
Because our brain, our interaction with our bodies, what we think, our preconceptions, our beliefs are all different, so we all feel love is different. Mm-hmm. And finally, as I believe it was The Weeknd, or however you pronounce his name as a group, wrote this, which was, "I can't feel my face when I'm with you," something to that matter, "I can't feel my face when I'm with you." I took that as being, from my point of view, I don't actually care what the song meant, but when you're with somebody that you truly love and you're having this conversation and you're smiling and you're laughing and maybe you're having a drink, maybe you're just having a coffee, and your face is like numb from smiling so much, "I can't feel my face when I'm with you." And I think that's a great expression of what love is to be so lost in conversation with your partner.
With Lisette and June.
On 90 Day Soulmate. Thank you for tuning in to What is Love? Well, love works. Well, 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette and Jim. Thank you, and we'll see you next time. 90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.